Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. From baby boomers to Gen Z, each generation has faced its own unique set of investment challenges and opportunities. While the bulk of wealth in the United States belongs to older generations, wealth among younger generations is growing rapidly, and they represent an increasingly important piece of the investment pie. This raises the question of how do and how should different generations invest. To help answer this question, I'm excited to be joined by my colleague Jack Manley, Global Market Strategist for JP Morgan Asset Management. Before we begin, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Jack, welcome to Insights Now.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here.
So why should the investment industry focus on younger investors? I mean, obviously, the majority of assets are held by much older people, so why not just focus there?
I think it has a lot to do with this idea of kind of skating to where the puck is going, not where it is right now. I think Wayne Gretzky said that. I'm not a big hockey guy, but I think Wayne Gretzky said that. And it's this idea, right, that when you are in your mid-30s, mid-40s, you are entering sort of the prime working age, right? You're entering the best time of your life to really be earning and progressing in your career. Between your mid-30s and your mid-40s, that's when you get rich, right? If you're making this money, you're accumulating wealth. And if you think about where millennials are sort of in their life cycle, I'm a younger millennial, or more of a middle-in-the-road millennial. I'm 32 years old, right? I'm sort of entering that period. Older millennials are already halfway through or more in that period. So while older Americans, baby boomers in particular, control north of 50% of the wealth in this country, may have the majority of the money at the moment, the growth rate is very much in the favor of these younger individuals. And if we think about what this situation is going to look like 10, 15 years from now, I think the balance of ownership is going to be quite different. That doesn't even take into consideration the overall kind of generational wealth transfer that we are set to see over the next 10 years, right? As our parents get older and maybe pass away, as our grandparents certainly get older and pass away, if they leave money to us, younger individuals, we have a little bit of sort of inorganic wealth growth there as well.
So much of the investment industry is focused on the question of helping investors prepare for retirement. If you're thinking about investing among younger generations, do you have to sort of reframe how you think about the purposes of investing?
I think you do. I mean, retirement without a doubt is very important, right? We don't want to downplay the importance of saving for retirement. But I think, you know, from a psychological perspective, if you're 25 or 30 or 35 years old, you're looking at yourself and you're saying, I'm not retiring anytime soon, right? I mean, if we take 65 years old as kind of the benchmark for when people retire, I got 30 years, 40 years to go before I retire. And if we have a more realistic conversation about when we're retiring, it's not going to be 65. It may be 70. It may be 75 by the time we get up to that age. So it's not 30 or 40 years. It's 50 years, right, from where we are right now. And that's a long time from where we are right now. And so a lot of younger investors in particular are very tempted to say, saving for this stuff can wait. And that's why I do think we have to reframe this conversation a little bit, because what's sometimes hard to remember is that there is a lot of life that happens between now and whenever retirement may be. And when I think about the sort of basic necessities of living, right? The money that I have to spend on things like housing, on education, on healthcare, stuff that basically everybody needs, right, at some point in their lives. And if you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for your children, you're doing it for your grandchildren. When my parents were my age, those three buckets, housing, education, healthcare, took up a little over 20% of their budgets. Now it's closer to 40% of our budgets. Which means that all the other fun stuff out there, right, that I don't have to do but probably want to do, like maybe I want to take a vacation every once in a while. Maybe I want to be able to donate to charity. Maybe I want to purchase a second home. The money that would traditionally be dedicated to those endeavors is now being funneled in to all these sort of necessities, like, you know, housing and education and healthcare. And so we have to think about saving not just for retirement, which is in many cases many, many decades down the line, especially for younger investors. But for those interim steps, you know, as we get older, we start families, we want to buy a home, right? All this stuff costs money. It costs more money, a lot more money than it did, you know, a few decades ago. And having the money to be able to do those things while also living comfortably and enjoying your life, it's becoming a lot more complicated. And investing is one of the ways to sort of solve for that issue.
Every generation, I mean, maybe the reason we talk about generations is that a group of people are sort of shaped by the events in which they grew up in.
Yeah.
And I think that's true for all the generations that demographers have named to this point. But what are some of the different cultural touch points almost of these generations? And how does that impact their attitude towards investing?
Yeah, I think you can take that in a couple different ways. I mean, one of them is focusing in on sort of recessions, big macro events that have happened recently. And I remember being a sort of middle of the road millennial, graduating high school right around the financial crisis, mm-hmm. right? And sort of entering college in this period of profound uncertainty. You know, my friends' parents might have been losing their jobs. They might have been losing mm-hmm. their houses. We don't know what the heck we're getting into. Older millennials were graduating from college and entering the workforce during this enormous global downturn, right? You look at what happened with COVID, it's a very similar story with Generation Z. I mean, so many of these people were forced to be remote throughout the course of their college. Maybe when they started working, they were forced to be remote, entering a terrible labor market, right? Entering a period of profound uncertainty. I don't think you can overemphasize how crazy it is that the last two recessions were the worst two recessions that we've had in a century. Mm-hmm. And for millennials and Gen Zers, they're basically the only recessions that we have ever experienced. And I think that leads to some real kind of psychological shock. Mm-hmm. I mean, in some cases, I think it can mean that a lot of us don't trust the system, whatever that may mm-hmm. mean, right? We don't trust banks or big institutions. We don't think they have our best interests at heart. That's a big part of it. It may also make us a little bit risk averse because we know how bad things can get. Almost perversely, it could have the opposite impact, which is that we become almost nihilistic. We're like, none of this stuff matters. I'm never going to get rich anyway. There's a pretty good chance that 10 years from now, the whole world's going to blow mm-hmm. up anyway. Why not go nuts? Why not put it all in cryptocurrency? Why not go crazy on meme stocks?
Roaring kitty.
Roaring kitty. Why not? Maybe I get rich. And if I don't, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I do think that the nature of the financial crisis, of COVID, and how those kind of we're tied into, you know, key sort of aging points, key sort of milestones in our progression towards adulthood for millennials, for Gen Z, that have very fundamentally transformed our generations in the way that we think. There's another component to this story, though, and I think it has a lot to do with technology. And I am a, like I said, kind of a middle-of-the-road millennial, born in 1991. I remember when we had one computer in the household. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got my first computer. I remember the dial-up internet connection. I remember when that became high-speed internet. I remember when the iPhone came out. And I remember before that, my first cell phone. You know, I was, in some of these cases, 10, 12, 15 years old, sort of depending on where you are in this technological sort of spectrum, young enough that I was able to pick these things up and learn them pretty quickly, but not so young that I had an innate understanding of this technology. You contrast that right now to Gen Zers who were sort of born into this world mm-hmm. where everybody's got social media, everybody's got a computer, and forget about a computer, everybody's got a supercomputer sitting in their pockets with smartphones, right? Everybody's got high-speed internet. Everybody shops online. This stuff is table stakes. And then look at the next generation, right? We don't spend a lot of time talking about Generation Alpha because the oldest of them are 12 years old, right? They're not relevant mm-hmm. right now for this industry. But anybody that's been to a restaurant recently or on an airplane knows that kids are entertained with screens, right? That's how parents parent nowadays, which means that you are growing up in this world knowing literally from probably a month or two after birth how to work with technology. And now AI comes into the picture, right? And I'm, you know, in my early 30s trying to figure out how to use some of these large language models. People that are 30 years younger than I am are going to have an extraordinary advantage in their understanding of this technology, their ability to make it do what they want it to do. And I think that there's really something to be said there. I mean, I'm sure you remember your first cell phone. I'm sure you remember when, you know, you got your first high-speed internet connection. different part of your life. Right?
I remember the world when there wasn't such a thing as a cell phone.
Which to somebody who's 5 years old is like unimaginable.
I remember when the idea was, well, you couldn't get in contact with somebody unless you could find a payphone and you had a dime.
Part of me wishes we would go back to those days. Well, sometimes I kind of liked being off the grid.
I think this is fascinating. We could really talk about it all day. But the basic point is that different generations are very much shaped by the experiences they've gone through. I know this was true.
Yeah.
The Depression era generation and how they behaved in the 1950s. And today we're sort of almost seeing a psychological barbell where people are either being too conservative because of the trauma they've been through, mm-hmm. or, as you say, nihilistic and just throwing caution to the wind. And what we really want is investors to try to find some middle ground of rationality in terms of investing.
That's exactly right.
And that's really why it's so important to think about how different generations not just invest or should invest, but how they think about investing.
Exactly right.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us in Insights Now.
Thanks, David.
On our next episode, Jack will be back to discuss what strategies investors can use to reduce their tax burden. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.